Hello and welcome to the OII podcast from the Oxford Internet Institute, part of the University of Oxford. The OII podcast looks at issues and developments in the digital world that matter to us all. Today, we're joined by Professor Mark Graham and Dr. Alessio Bertolini. Mark is Professor of Internet Geography here at the OII. His research focuses on digital labor, the gig economy, and digital inequalities. Alessio is a researcher at the OII for the Fair Work Project, where he is investigating platform work in the UK and Germany. Hello, I'm Veena McCool. Welcome. Today we're going to discuss how we can make gig work fair. And I'll start with you, Alessio. How big is the gig economy?
Well, what we know is that it's very big, but we don't know exactly how big it is. And the problem is that statistical offices around the world and even researchers from around the world have found it very difficult to define exactly what the gig economy is and what the parameters to include gig workers in a statistics or not. So the estimates really vary quite substantially from a fraction of a percentage point to several percentage point up to 15-20%. So there's a big difference between those workers that only work in the gig economy occasionally as a part-time, as a casual gig on top of other jobs, and workers who do this on a full-time permanent basis. However, what we know is that it's growing and it's becoming more and more everyday part of the labor market.
And is the gig economy really coming for our jobs?
Well, it's not really coming. It has come already, in a sense. Many and many jobs, you know, since the beginning of Uber in 2009, many and many more jobs are becoming platformized, as we say. So the many and many more people are finding everyday jobs through apps, through websites, online and offline. And, we're not just thinking, when people think about the gig economy, people think, well, mostly like Uber or food delivery companies, but actually like tutors and nurses and lawyers and accountants, designers, translators, and so on and so forth are increasingly becoming platformized. Even us at university, we're seeing our job becoming more and more platformized, being employed on a piece rate to do certain activities within our jobs.
And if we think about this from a worker's perspective, Mark, is gig work good for workers?
It's a good question. So I've been studying this topic for over a decade, and I've spoken to workers on every continent all around the world. And one thing that you hear from workers consistently is they're grateful for the income that they have. They're often grateful for the jobs that they have. But the gig economy comes with a lot of issues. One key issue is that when we talk about the gig economy, what we often mean is that workers are self-employed. They're not employees of the platforms that they're working through or working for. And because they're self-employed, that comes with a lot of risks for workers. So workers who are self-employed can't rely on a lot of things that you take for granted if you're an employee of a company. Something as simple as being paid a minimum wage. So if you're self-employed, if you work in the gig economy, you can't rely on that kind of minimum income level, usually on most of the platforms that are out there. And there's all sorts of other risks and harms that workers experience. If you're, for instance, a food delivery worker, in much of the world, you're weaving in and out of traffic. It's quite unsafe work. If you drive a taxi for a ride-hail platform, in a lot of the world, there are risks of robbery, of carjacking. A lot of these platforms, they allow users to rate workers, they allow the consumers to rate workers, and this introduces all sorts of biases into the system. So there's research out there that shows that, for instance, women or ethnic minorities will statistically receive lower ratings than other workers. And many of these workers also they can't join collective bodies like trade unions because the companies don't recognize them, or there isn't the legal framework for them to be able to do that as self-employed workers. So is it good for workers? I think there's a lot of issues that we see time and time again that just really aren't being addressed.
And can you tell us a bit more about the Fair Work Project and what it's doing about standards in gig work?
So the Fair Work Project came about because of a lot of these risks and harms that we saw happening all over the world. So what we do in the Fair Work Project, we started out in 2018, and what we said was we need to develop some minimum standards. We need to develop some principles that define what decent work is, what fair work is. So we gathered together some stakeholders in Geneva, the International Labour Organization, some representatives from the private sector, from platforms, some representatives from the labour movement, trade unions and workers, and some policymakers. And we basically put this question to everyone: what is fair work and what is unfair work? From that, we developed some principles, some basic minimum standards of fair work, and then we took them to in-country workshops around the world. We started out in India and in South Africa. We then had some workshops in Germany. And then since then, we've really expanded the project around the world. We've done this in 39 countries. Now, what we do with these principles is we've turned them into a scoring system. So we do research against we do research on these gig companies, and we assess them against these principles. And the way that we assess them, we speak to the management, we speak to workers, and we examine the contracts. And in doing that, we give the companies a score out of 10 based on these principles. And we use that score to tell a story about basically how fair or how unfair the working conditions that the workers experience on that platform are. So we're not really interested in telling a story of, is the gig economy good or is it bad? It's a more nuanced story than that. But the scores, because we do the research in a comparative way, we were able to show that fair work or unfair work, there's nothing natural or inherent about it. We show that these are choices that different companies choose to make. They choose to set up contracts that either provide certain minimum standards to workers or don't. So Fair Work, at its core, it's an action research project. We try and understand how work is experienced by workers. But in doing this, in turning all of this research into scores, we also try and change what happens out there.
Just to build on what Mark has just said, I think an important and sometimes overlooked aspect of the Fair Work project is also the ability to contribute in changing the narrative. A lot of these platforms are, you know, claiming that they are disruptive, you know, they are innovative, so they cannot be, can be put a brake on what they're doing. But what we're showing is instead that it's possible, you know, to have a gig economy that is at the same time innovative and disruptive and at the same time fair. And we're showing this through our scores, and we're showing that not all platforms are inherently bad, that the gig economy is not inherently bad, but that is, as Mark was saying, you know, it's really a choice that platforms make in having certain labor standards and not others.
And it seems like Fair Work research shows generally low scores, which tells us that not enough is being done here. What effect do these scores actually have?
Oh, yeah, the most common score is zero. And if we look at in every country in which we do the work that we do, we produce a league table. And by league table, I mean we just compare the scores against one another. We stack them up from the highest scorer to the lowest scorer. And generally, in most countries, the average is just extremely low. But as Alessia was saying, there are good examples out there, or there are less bad examples out there. We have examples of every single one of the principles being realized somewhere, in some company, in some place. So none of them are impossible. And I think it's also important to point out that these principles of fair work that we assess companies against, we're not setting up a kind of gold standard of work. These are really basic minimum standards, like workers should earn at least the local minimum wage, that they should be protected from basic harms in doing their job, that they should be protected from discrimination, that they should have the right to collective representation, and really basic things that most people take for granted. And so even despite the fact that the bar is really quite low in these principles, as I was saying, the most common score that we find out there is a zero. But in doing the work that we do, in publishing these scores, in talking about these scores, and maybe most importantly, in comparing companies against one another and showing that actually these principles are possible, that they are realistic, we've convinced a lot of companies to make changes to their practices. So what we typically do as part of the research process, or what we always do as part of the research process, is before publishing the scores, we go back to the companies and we say to them, look, here's your score, but here are the sorts of things you would have to change to get a better score. So we tell that to them on for any of the scores that they haven't achieved. And when we started doing this, there weren't that many companies that really wanted to engage with the suggestions that we've made. But we're now half a decade into the project, and there's now tons of companies all over the world that when we make these suggestions to them, they're willing to make changes because they want a better score. So to date, we've had, I think it's 304 instances of companies making changes to their policies as a result of engaging with us. This ranges from introducing a minimum wage or a living wage, a minimum earning level for workers, to implementing meaningful anti-discrimination policies, to all sorts of other things. These are changes that have improved the jobs of millions of workers as a result of the research that we've done.
What can the listener do here? I mean, how can consumers make a difference when companies like Uber and Deliveroo seemingly hold all the power when it comes to how they treat their workers?
There's quite a few things that you as a listener can do. So one thing that you can really do is pay attention to these scores. As a consumer, as a user of these companies, you have a choice. And often it's not that difficult to choose to use one platform versus another platform. It's as simple as installing an app and creating a profile on it. So use better scoring platforms. That's a really important thing that you can do as a user. Another thing that you can do is communicate with these companies, write to them, communicate with them, tell them that you demand more from them, tell them that you care about decent working conditions, tell them that you're paying attention to their score. One thing that we have set up in the Fair Work Project is something that we call the Fair Work Pledge. And what we ask organizations to do with the Fair Work Pledge is simply pledge to use better scoring companies as at an organizational level. So whether you're a company or a charity or a university, a church, a mosque, or anything else, you can say to your members, employees, and so on, we encourage you, if you're ordering food, use a better scoring platform. If you're getting a building cleaned, use a better scoring platform. If you're taking a taxi somewhere, use a better scoring platform. The pledge, it's free to sign up to it. We've had dozens and dozens of organizations commit to it. From the Berlin Senate has committed to it, the Church of England, McDonald's Germany, and a range of other organizations. So as a listener, you can get the organization that you work for to sign the pledge. Another thing that people listening can do is to vote for representatives who stand on the side of workers. There are politicians, there are political parties out there that have proactive policies that can make a difference for gig workers, and there are those that don't. So I really encourage everyone to do their research and to really look into which politicians out there do stand on the side of workers, and especially precarious gig workers. And of course, a really important thing that we all should be doing is getting organized as workers. As Alessio was saying earlier, the gig economy, it's here. It might be coming for all of our jobs next. And so the most important thing that we can all do as workers is organize through collective bodies. And if we do that, we will have more power when these platforms come for our jobs.
And a final question for both of you. I wonder if you can share examples of what good looks like here. Maybe that's a particular principle that has been demonstrated effectively by a company, or a company that's adhered to many of these principles. I'm curious to hear what good looks like when it comes to fair gig work.
Well, I would just to remind kind of the audience, actually, our FAIR principles are basic standard of work. So even although we only had one of the 600 and odd platform that we have rated around the world, only one company scored 10 out of 10. And that means that this company was the only gig economy company that could be claimed to satisfy all the basic Fair Work standards. However, if you want an example, I could give the one about, for example, the living wage. You know, we've seen that only a tiny minority, we're talking about a few percentage points of the companies could be evidenced to actually have a policy that supports a minimum wage, a living wage for its workers. And this is like despite the fact that most of these workers are self-employed, so minimum wage legislation doesn't apply to them, but also to the fact that minimum wage legislation in many countries is not really a living wage legislation. So minimum wage in most countries is below the minimum standard for having a decent standard of living even when working full time. So this is an example where companies have by choice decided to pay the workers or have a policy to make sure that workers who work for the company can have a decent standard of living while working for the company.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in terms of what good looks like, this is really what we've spent years doing with the Fair Work principles, is refining them through dialogue with workers, with trade unions, with policymakers, and with companies, refining them year after year to precisely answer that question. So the Fair Work principles, as Alessia was saying, they're not, these are not a particularly high bar, but we would see them as minimum standards of good. And sadly, as Alessia said, we've only ever seen one 10 out of 10 company out there. So there's still an enormous amount of work to do to raise standards in the gig economy for workers.
Thank you both for joining us on the OII podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.